two things I wanted to address before I begin this morning. One is the choir won't be singing next week either, which came to mind to me just a moment ago, because we will have a guest preacher and musician next week. Activist Tim DeChristopher will be here with Brian Cahall, who is a musician who travels with him, and I hope you will all make an effort to be here. It should be an amazing morning of music and message. Tim is a climate justice activist. If you didn't see in the e-news, you might Google online Bitter 70 and his work on behalf of our climate. So I hope you can all be here and bring some friends. And I also wanted to very much thank all of you who have contributed to the Social Action Table sale to help our youth get to General Assembly. It was such a spontaneous and generous idea and offering that has come out of this community on behalf of our youth, and it's so greatly appreciated. So thank you for all of that, all your good spirits. And I hope your April Fool's Day was not overly filled with folly, I don't know, or maybe it should have been. I hope it was fun. My opening words about joy this morning came to us from J. Ruth Gendler's Book of Qualities. I referenced her thoughts on courage and compassion last month. She takes emotions and frames them with character. Although joy is spontaneous, she suggested, she is immensely patient. Joy knows that there are obstacles on every path and that every moment is the perfect moment. When I first started thinking about joy, what occurred to me is that I, maybe like some of you, make too little time for it. There is so much to be done, always. Important work. And often attending to joy, noticing joy, takes a back seat. My colleague, the Reverend Martha Niebank, has a little statement in her email signature. If you have emailed to her, you will remember. It reads, "Remember joy!" Exclamation point. And every time I get an email from her, I think, oh yeah, joy. Does that ring familiar to any of you? When is the last time you remember, really remember, experiencing joy? I hope it was recent. We are so weighted by our worlds, our individual ones, our cares, our concerns, our successes sometimes, but likely our failures, our shortcomings, our wants, our needs. Eeyore comes to mind. And then, of course, there's the truth of the fragile and hurting world around us. I remember sharing with all of you an excerpt from Lewis Thomas's book, The Lives of a Cell, where he reminds us what a miracle it is that we are here at all. That he imagines if we remembered the odds, we would all be dancing in a constant dazzlement of surprise. But life intrudes in its messiness, and we don't remember, and we're not constantly dancing, that is, feeling the joy of our existence. Well, maybe some of you are, and if you are, I applaud you. I suspect many of us struggle a bit more. This past week, was a tough one in the Unitarian Universalist arena. I'm not sure how it was for each of you individually, but to begin with, one of our ministers in Turley, Oklahoma, was arrested on charges of receiving and engaging with child pornography. We grieve for the community he served, for his family, his friends. They are all undoubtedly suffering. It is especially troubling when those we trust to be working for good, who are in positions that call us to be our best selves, turn out to be so disappointingly flawed. And then news at the end of this past week that our association's president resigned. For those of you visiting us or relatively new to our tradition, we Unitarian Universalists hold ourselves to pretty high expectations around addressing issues of racial justice and systemic inequality. If you were here on March 19th, a couple of weeks ago, when the Reverend Tom Shade preached, you'll recall his connecting the dots from the identity of religious independence to our prioritizing justice seeking as what defines our tradition. We take pride in that work. Too much pride sometimes. So when the most recently open regional lead position, of which there are five in our country, went to an ordained white male without adequate explanation as to why the non-ordained female woman of color who was up for the same job did not get it, there was widespread reaction and frustration. There were countless expressions of our hopes and expectation for equal access to upper levels of position, upper level positions of leadership. Long story short, our association's president, Peter Morales, indicated in his letter of resignation that, in his words, "I have clearly lost the trust of many people, and my comments have become a focal point in the ongoing discussion. It is clear to me that I am not the right person to lead our association as we work together to create the processes and structures that will address our shortcomings and build the diverse staff we all want." These have not been joyful events. We appear to be a tradition in some tumult, with a fair amount of hurt and pain and confusion. And to be honest, we have experienced some of that here in our own church recently. Many of you were present when we co-hosted Black Lives Matter Boston speakers 2 weeks ago. And while many of us were inspired and challenged, others were confused or hurt by the exchange of questions and answer, by the emotionality we were either not expecting or not prepared for. In our grappling, we join the legion of Unitarian Universalists struggling to address racial justice with the urgency and incompleteness of now. It is hard work with a long trajectory, and it often feels anything but joyful. The Reverend Sean Denison Parker wrote an article recently called "Good Intentions and Incomplete Efforts." Sean is a transgender person, and my guess is he experiences a great deal of both, good intentions and incomplete efforts. But in this article, he speaks of a different focus of intentions and efforts that yet remains instructive for our racial justice work as well. "I preached recently in a building that was a beautiful old chapel in the country," he wrote. "Because it was old, it was one of those buildings where accessibility was a challenge. The congregation had just finished installing an accessible entrance and bathroom. They were understandably and appropriately proud, and I was enthusiastic in my gratitude as they showed me the improvements. Then they took me upstairs to the worship space and showed me the pulpit, which was up 4 steps on the chancel. Those steps are not a barrier for me, but they would be for others. And we'd just been celebrating their good work in making the rest of the building accessible. And I choked, I stammered out something like, 'Oh, too bad those stairs are there,' which was neither very polite nor very helpful in reminding them there was still work to be done." He continues, "The hardest times to hold ourselves and each other accountable compassionately is when the work has begun, but there's more to be done. The hardest time to hold ourselves and each other accountable compassionately is when the work has begun, but there's more to be done. We want to acknowledge the effort," he says, "and it feels a little awkward to say, 'What a great start. You did something great, but you're not quite there. So aside from the fact that when I read it, I was imagining our really fantastic accessible bathroom, the fundraising for which is underway now, and then noticed where I'm standing. The point of sharing the article is the sentence I repeated. The hardest time to hold ourselves and each other accountable compassionately is when the work has begun, but there's more to be done. On a different Sunday, I would focus on the more to be done, how we must keep at it and be compassionate with each other, which are both really important. But for today, I want to pull out of his message this: the work has begun. Yay. Yay! There is so much joy in that. The work has begun, the never finished, always imperfect, enormously important work has begun. Elbert Hubbard, what a name. Elbert Hubbard was a 19th century American writer and philosopher who started his professional life as a traveling soap salesman. He said, "There is only one way to avoid criticism. Do nothing, say nothing, be nothing." Maybe he sold a lot of soap, I don't know. But that is not the path we want to be on. And here's the thing Ruth Gendler reminded us. Joy knows that there are obstacles on every path and that every moment is the perfect moment. This whole effort, this initiative we are engaged in, this thing we call living, is one big, messy thing that each of us will see our own end of, but none of us see the end of. So our joy must be found in the midst of it as we work to create of what we know it can be. That work we have begun. So we heard two readings this morning offering potential pathways to help us remember joy, to practice its presence more intentionally in our lives. Nancy Schaeffer's delightful query of the big creator reminds each of us of our generative capacities. "Weren't you so filled up glad you couldn't sleep?" she asked. We can each create in our own ways. We may not be building an entire new world, but we make pieces of art, music, potlucks filled with soul-renewing food, a card for your neighbor. There is a song in the musical Sunday in the Park with George. He's dot, 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 dot. "Look, I made a hat where there never was a hat." Isn't that a great statement? Every act of creation, if it's only a stretch and a thank you, every act can be one filled with joy. And then our friend Thomas More, who left home as an adolescent to live among the Servite order of priests for 12 years. More entices us to find joy in withdrawal, in retreat. Not long and lingering retreats, not 12 years of retreat necessarily, but the everyday moments that help us refill and rejuvenate and restore. Times in which the soul rejoys itself. It may seem counterintuitive that I would suggest, as more advised, withdrawal from the world, even as I have been praising our engagement with it. But these are moments of withdrawal that might give us access to the joy that is close at hand. The freshly cleaned linen. The sparkling dishes. the bird in the tree. Remember joy, Martha reminds us. One of my favorite lines from the Reverend Clark Wells, whose book I always wanted Skinner House to publish and they wouldn't, a former UU minister and terrific poet, is his exhortation to do what we can to put ourselves on paths of appreciation. He says, "It is not always the great evils that obstruct and waylay our joy. It is our unnecessary and undignified surrender to the petty enemies, time and schedules, our irritabilities of the day. And I suggest," he says, "it is our duty to scheme against them." Here's the thing about joy. It's a bit of a chicken and egg kind of prospect. In the process of creation of something or of love, or in the process of withdrawal from the busyness that distracts us, there are moments of connection to each other and to all things that stop us short, that make us feel full somehow in our hearts, that bring smiles to our faces sometimes despite ourselves. This is joy. The connection, the memory that we are, as Carlene Griffiths-Sekou reminded us 2 weeks ago, inextricably bound to each other and to this miracle we call life. When that realization intrudes, or when we take the time to notice it, and maybe sometimes it's one way of notice and sometimes another, we know joy, our hearts swell, and we are bound. Joseph Campbell references the bodhisattvas who joyfully participate in the sorrows of the world. We are not likely all bodhisattvas, those whose specific task is to dedicate their lives to attaining Buddhahood. But it is likely we can be closer than we think. So this week, I want to invite each of you to make room for joy, to prompt it if you can by creating something, anything. We are not all Michelangelos, we are not Hemingways, but we all create things all the time, moments of connection that can inspire us to joy when we are paying attention. Let whatever it is be enough and feel the joy of it. Or withdraw for a moment to a space of connecting with your freshly folded laundry or your 5 minutes of salutation to the sun or your favorite music and allow yourself to recognize the joy in that. Beckon your inner bodhisattva to keep you company as you recall your connection to all things and experience the joy of it. We will always have work to do, and we have begun. Let's not forget to experience the joy of it along the way. Every moment is the right moment. How about an amen to that?
Amen.
Yeah, good job. Meister Eckhart said, "If the only prayer you ever pray is thank you, that would suffice." Our closing hymn, "Oh, We Give Thanks." We will sing it 3 times through with gusto.